live and local.
From the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette,
we are Acadiana Sports Station, 1037 The Game, KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette.
It's time to step your game up.
Boy, you wouldn't know how to write your name if it wasn't stenciled on your locker.
It's Rap Game with RP3, Raymond Parts III.
One of God's own prototypes. A high-powered mutant of some kind never even considered for mass production. Too weird to live, too rare to die.
Want to interact? Call in at 337-706-0111.
We have it. Yeah, we have it.
RP3 is taking the mic and bringing you to the center of the sports world on Rap Game with RP3 on 1037 The Game and 1037thegame.com.
He's got to keep living, man. L-I-V-I-N.
Solid. I'll tell you what I'm blathering about. I've got information, man.
Putting on a show today, now has 19 points. Here's Bruner, 6 seconds. 30-footer off the glass, too hard. Rebound, Copeland goes out to the left wing. He'll fire a three at the buzzer. It's no good. Tigers win. Tigers win. Survive and advance here in Jacksonville with a 79-74 victory over the Bulldogs of Yale.
Good morning, Acadiana. This is Raymond Parse III, your host for the Rap Game with RP3, as we wrap up a full week of broadcasting live from La Triomphe Golf and Country Club here in Broussard, home of the Chittimacha Louisiana Open, presented by Mistras. We have a jam-packed show for you today. If you want to get in, tell us your thoughts about the LSU men's basketball team's win over Yale in the NCAA tournament yesterday. Or if you want to talk about all those moves the New Orleans Saints are continually to make, including signing Jared Cook, a special teams player from the Vikings, and even having Cam Meredith restructure his contract to free up even more money, you can give us a call on the Arco Equipment Hotline, 337-706-0111. On today's show, we got a ton of guests for you. 702, the web.com tours writer extraordinaire Kevin Price will be joining us live here in the 103.7 The Game trailer out here at the Chittimacha Louisiana Open. We'll also be talking with Jim Gonzalo about McNeese State Athletics. They had a big win over the Raging Cajun softball team. This week, he's also going to try to give us some insight about the B.J. Blunt situation, why an All-American did not take part in his own program's pro day. We'll also be talking with Barry Hurstis, our boy Barry, about the Saints' free agency moves. We're also going to have Raging Cajun softball coach Jerry Glasgow is going to join us at 8:15 today. His team is on the road at South Alabama, about to open up a three-game series in conference play. Coach Glasgow is going to give us an update about his squad and how the Raging Cajuns are playing at this point of the season. And then we'll wrap up the show, as we always do on Fridays, talking with Tyler Nunez. He's going to give us a full recap from the LSU men's basketball victory there in Jacksonville. Tyler will be live from Jacksonville. He'll help us preview Saturday's game, which will be a berth on for the Sweet 16 on the line against Maryland. Plus, we'll have RPOs with RP3 and my rant of the week. So it's going to be jam-packed. But let's start off with what we heard, the voice of the LSU Tigers, Chris Blair, which you were able to listen to live right here on 103.7 The Game yesterday. LSU looked sensational to start off the game. They did. I think they started off on a 7-0 or 9-0 run. Naz Reid was flexing his muscles, so to speak. Yale had no answer for him. And they just went after, they went after the Bulldogs. They did. You could tell that LSU, we had talked about it on the show yesterday. Well, hell, we talked about it on the show all week. Would this team be focused? We thought this team would be focused. It would come out, it would be determined, it'd have a chip on its shoulder. National media types had, across the board, that was the trendy upset pick, the trendy non-5-12 upset pick, was that Yale would take down LSU. So much turmoil surrounding LSU, engulfing this program with everything, the drama with the Will Wade situation being indefinitely suspended, then feuding with the administration, with press releases back and forth. Then Javonte Smart was held out for an abundance of caution in the regular season finale versus Vanderbilt. And then he doesn't get cleared to play by the university until 2 hours before tip at the SEC tournament. And then we know what happened at the SEC tournament when they get upset by Florida in the quarterfinals. Not a lot of confidence by national media types, but we talked about it on the show. We thought that they would come out. I said they would come out and win by double digits. I was wrong. They came out, and they played extremely focused to start off with. This was a 45-29 game at the break. 45-29. LSU appeared that it was absolutely coasting to a victory. And then the second half happened. And this is what this LSU team has been about the entire season, ladies and gentlemen. This is who they are. They are schizophrenic. They are bipolar. However you want to describe it, they are not a consistent ball club from start to finish. They're just not. They've had very few instances this season where they've played a complete game. I'd say probably the Tennessee overtime win would be an example of them playing a complete game, rising up to the competition. But that's one. There's two of the things about this LSU team. They don't play a consistent game from start to finish, and then they play down to the competition. They have these lags in a game where they just kind of go to sleep. The execution is poor. The energy is minimal. And they have these lags. And Cody Schutz and I, out at the watch party there at Twin Peaks yesterday on Johnston, had a terrific time, by the way. You guys should go out and hang out with our good brother Ben Love. Tonight, he'll be out at Twin Peaks for a watch party for more NCAA tournament action tonight. But me and Cody were sitting there, and we're going, well, here it comes. Here comes the LSU lag in the second half. And sure enough, there it came. They just let Yale get back into the game. They weren't crisp in the second half. They weren't crisp with their execution on defense. Yale started getting something going. And if you just look at the numbers, you're like, yeah. But LSU held on for a 79-74 win. Yale got it to like 2 points a few times there in the last 3 to 4 minutes. Got it down to 2 points. This was like a 13-14 point game at the break. And LSU allowed Yale to mess around and get back into the game. And for everyone that says, well, you know, that's going to be the difference for LSU in this tournament. That's where they're going to miss Will Wade. Well, let's be fair. This is what this team did with Will Wade throughout the entire season. Do you remember them being down by 14 to a terrible Missouri team? Do you remember them messing around against Arkansas twice? They lost one of those games. Florida has their number because Mike White knows how to coach up his guys against LSU. It's a bad matchup. The way LSU wants to play, the way that Florida wants to play. We knew that Yale wanted to run. Okay, we talked about that with Amy Just yesterday from NOLA.com. How she expected, don't be surprised if this is a game that's in the hundreds. Okay, it ended up not being that. And LSU's defense was actually quite good early on. But then they just left guys wide open for three. What happened to the effort? What happened to the focus? This team loses focus at times. And this is the NCAA tournament. And as great as it is for them to win their opening game, and now the only thing they have to do is defeat Maryland out of the Big Ten. If they do that, they'll advance to the Sweet 16 for the first time since 2006. That will be a great accomplishment, especially with everything that's surrounding the program right now. But Yale did not go quietly in the night. Senior guard Alex Copeland for the Bulldogs and junior forward Alex Bruner alternated three-pointers in the final 45 seconds. Copeland actually drained a fast break three-pointer to bring the Bulldogs within five, and then 15 seconds later, Bruner's three-pointer pulled Yale within four. Another 15 seconds later, Copeland hit another one to get them back within four, and Bruner's second three-pointer put Yale within 3 points. Quote, "I guess that's the madness part of this thing," end quote, LSU scholar made said of Yale's four late three-pointers. Once again, remember the Florida game at the SEC tournament? They got sucked in on the drive, poor defense, Tremont Waters, co-defensive player of the year in the SEC, first team all defense in the league. Was not guarding his man like he should have, gave up the game-winning three-pointer. Did anyone else have those thoughts running through their brain late in the last minute and a half to 2 minutes of yesterday's game? Where you see Yale start storming back? But to give credit to LSU, they did make their free throws. Schuyler Mays made his, Naz Reid, Tremont Waters, Javonte Smart. Those four guys combined to make 9 of their last 10 free throws. Mays kind of led the way with everyone, 19 points. Waters had 15 points. Naz Reid had a double-double with 14 and 10. Cavell Bigby-Williams, he had a double-double, 10 points and 10 rebounds. He was a monster early on. He had also had a few blocks. He was getting his teammates really amped up early on, especially there in the first half when they had such a great start defensively to the start of the game. Once again, LSU had a 16-point lead at halftime. That actually grew to 18 points in the second half, and Yale stormed all the way back and made this a far closer game than it should have been. Tony Benford said afterwards, quote, "We didn't execute as well as we needed to, and we settled too much. I thought we settled for some jumpers when we should have attacked the paint like we did in the first half." Once again, why? Like, why does this team change? Why did the team change the way it defended Florida from the first half of the game at the SEC tournament to how it did it in the second half? Which allowed Florida to come back, which allowed Florida to win the game. They changed their mentality. For whatever reason, I don't know why. Look, Maryland is a good program. They're traditionally a good program, an NCAA tournament team. Their coach gets them to the Sweet 16. LSU cannot play down to the competition. They can't play like they did in the second half against Yale and get away with it against Maryland if they want to make a Sweet 16. They just can't. And we're to the point of the season now where we're in March Madness. This shouldn't be something that has to be explained and talked about and game planned for is, hey, when you have your foot on the gas, don't let up. Continue to have that killer instinct. Continue to attack the paint. They had the mix match down low with the big fellas, and they went away from it. Once again, went away from it. This team, nearly every game, will have a lapse like that. Well, they will just lag with the execution and their energy and what they do on both ends of the court. And it's bit them in the behind more than a few times this season. They got away with it yesterday. It's a win, and they're moving on, and that's all that matters. At the end of the day, that's all that matters, that they win and advance, right? That's all that matters. But that said, man, you would like them to play a good second half, right? I mean, they played such a tremendous first half against Florida in the SEC tournament, lost that game because they played poorly in the second half. They played lights out in the first half. Yale made a little bit of a run about midway through, remember? And then LSU was like, we're not going to play around with you guys. And then they extended that lead all the way up to 15. And then 18 in the second half. And it's like when they got to 18 points, they're like, whatever. And give credit to LSU. Maione, Yale's NBA draft prospect, their leading scorer, he had his second worst outing of the entire season. The junior scored just 5 points on 2 of 16 shooting. and he made just one of his 10 three-point attempts as well. Marlon Taylor did a terrific job guarding him, by the way. And we always talk about Marlon with his ability to jump out the gym. But he did a terrific job yesterday defensively. Here's the difference in the game. Neither team shot very well from three-point range. LSU was only 4 of 17 for 23.5%. But Yale jacked up 37 three-pointers. They only made 8, 21.6%. I'll ask you this, diehard LSU fans. What if Yale would have made just 3 of those three-pointers? If they would have made 3 more of those three-pointers, if they were 11 of 37, which is still woeful from three-point range, you know what happens? Yale wins that game. Yale was terrible from three-point range, and that played a huge role. They were that god-awful from three-point range, and they still nearly came back and beat LSU. Some concerns about the Tigers. They get the win. They move on. That's all that matters at the end of the day. But they can't play like they did in the second half against Yale if they want to beat Maryland on Saturday. We'll talk more about LSU hoops later in the show. We'll talk more about the NCAA tournament later in the show as well. But when we come back here on the Wrap Game with RP3, we're going to talk about a fella that had himself a hell of a game at the NCAA tournament. Plays for Murray State. Why are we talking about him? There's been a lot of talk about the New Orleans Pelicans maybe interested in having his services and taking him in the NBA draft lottery. We'll dive more into that when we come back here live from La Triomphe Golf and Country Club here for the Chittimacha Louisiana Open presented by Mistras.
Bruce Hauser, right elbow jumper is up. That's around the rim, no good. Rebound, there it is. He got it. Morant got it. It's a triple-double. 15 points, 10 rebounds, 15 assists.
Welcome back to the Wrap Game with RP3. I'm your host, Raymond Parts, the third, broadcasting live from La Triomphe Golf and Country Club here, home of the Chittimacha Louisiana Open, presented by Mistras. That clip you just heard was someone who was the star of day one of the NCAA tournament. That's Ja Morant. If you don't know who he is, you soon will. He may become the breakout star of the NCAA tournament. A lot of talk's been a lot of discussion has been had about who the best player in college basketball is and who's going to be the number one overall pick. And for most people, it's Zion Williamson, the freshman sensation for the Duke Blue Devils. But Ja Morant, who plays for Murray State, that's right, the Racers, they got themselves an upset yesterday, the notorious 5-12 upset, correctly picked by the one and only Cody Schutz back in the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing, I may add. I did not pick that game correctly, and my bracket is already dreadful. Ja is projected to be now maybe like a number two pick. He was already that before the breakout performance yesterday with the triple-double. The Murray State sophomore leads the country in assist. The entire country in assist. He's a dynamic point guard. He's also a top-tier scorer and just an overall amazing point guard. He can both dish and score. He's electric. He's also a high flyer. He can get above the rim. They destroyed Marquette yesterday, 83-64, and that's probably the first time a lot of folks got to see him. He scored 17 points, 16 assists, and 11 rebounds. Here's a stat for you. He only took 9 shots. 9. He was 5 of 9 shooting. He can shoot it from 3 easily. He can dunk. He can also defend pretty well. And the reason why I bring up Ja Morant, a lot of the talk concerning the New Orleans Pelicans is what they're going to do with Anthony Davis and that they want to get maximum value for him. So they're going to want to get some players and some draft picks, preferably a lottery pick. Now, can Boston make that happen? I think Boston has the assets if they want to break up that young nucleus, Jason Tatum, Marcus Smart, and then send some picks. The Pels are in a position right now because of how bad they've been this season that they look like they're going to be in the lottery mix as well. Now, the problem is that the Pels pick, unless things go their way in the draft lottery, they're not going to be able to take Morant. Because, look, Ja's not going to fall past number three. Okay? He's just not. Most people think he's going to be the number two overall pick behind Zion Williamson. That said, a lot of folks have been kind of linking Morant to the New Orleans Pelicans based on what they could get out of the Anthony Davis trade. Whether that's they take the picks from the Boston Celtics, maybe flip those into something else, or a scenario as well. What if they trade Anthony Davis to the New York Knicks? Now, the Knicks are one of the worst teams in the NBA. And the Knicks, most people project that they're going to probably be at the top of the draft. That they have one of the best chances to get the number one, number two, or number three overall picks. Now, let's say the draft lottery occurs, and the Knicks have the number two pick. If you're the New Orleans Pelicans, and whoever the new new front office leadership, your new director of basketball operations, and your new general manager, instead of trading to Boston, where you're going to get Jason Tatum, Marcus Smart, but you're not going to get a lottery pick. You're going to get a first-round pick. It'll be better than what L.A. had offered you, the Lakers, but it's probably going to be a mid-round first-round pick, maybe just right outside the lottery. You get your young stars to package in with Drew Holiday, like a Jason Tatum and a Marcus Smart. And maybe you re-sign some of these guys that are going to be free agents like Julius Randle and Elfrid Payton, former Raging Cajun star. Well, that's not a bad deal, right? You get rid of Davis. You get Jason Tatum, who's going to be probably a future all-star, multiple all-star. You have him. You re-sign Elfrid Payton, the hometown kid. You got Drew Holiday, kind of a mild-mannered leader of the team. This is some nice pieces. But what if you trade Anthony Davis to the Knicks and you're able to take Ja Morant? A explosive point guard who's a scoring machine but also leads the country in assist. And you have him run your number one. As much as we love Elfrid with the Raging Cajuns, he's had injury concerns, right? And they don't know if they're going to be able to re-sign him anyway. Is that a deal that you take if you're the Pels? Do you go out there and you trade him to the Knicks so you can get Ja Morant? The whole conversation has been Zion Williamson, but I've seen traction about the Pels possibly in the mix of taking Ja Morant out of Murray State. Now, you're going to have Morant as your number one, Drew Holiday as your number two. Maybe you bring back Elfrid Payton. He can be your backup guy, either at the one or the two. You give yourself some quality depth. I don't know. It's an interesting predicament that the Pels have themselves in. Because Zion's going to go number one overall. That's going to happen. And maybe if you're the Pels and the Knicks get the number one overall pick in this summer's draft, that you trade with them Anthony Davis and you take Zion Williamson and, you know, a guy who's like Charles Barkley and Dominique Wilkins and a little bit of Shaq all rolled into one. Okay, great. But don't be surprised if the young fella who got himself a triple-double yesterday in the NCAA tournament is going to be in a New Orleans Pelicans uniform next year. When we come back here on The Rap Game with RP3, we're going to dive in. The New Orleans Saints continue to be busy with free agency and restructuring some contracts. We'll dive into that right here on The Rap Game with RP3, live from La Triomphe Golf and Country Club. Welcome back to The Rap Game with RP3. I am your host, Raymond Parsha III, broadcasting live from La Triomphe Golf and Country Club here in Broussard for the Chittimacha Louisiana Open, presented by Mistras. The NCAA tournament may be in full effect. The Louisiana Open may be in full effect. But the New Orleans Saints, they're not taking a backseat to anyone, ladies and gentlemen. They're still out there making moves as free agency is still going on. We are approaching the draft, and the Saints are still making tweaks to their roster, still making moves, and it's been a busy week for them. We reported that on the show yesterday that Jared Cook had agreed. Reports are that the Saints and Jared Cook have agreed to a deal. We still do not know the specifics of that deal. He is the tight end, a journeyman tight end. And this is a guy that played college ball at South Carolina, and he bumped around the league for a little while. Could never catch on, could never live up to his potential. It was always the knock on Jared Cook. And the last 2 years, he's kind of stabilized. And he had a career year last year, catching 68 balls for almost 900 yards and scoring 6 touchdowns. Those are all career highs. So he's the most coveted tight end on the market. The Saints, by multiple reports, have already locked him up. So that's great. And they've been very aggressive with smart moves this free agency period. They got the defensive lineman, the D-tackle from the New England Patriots with all of the playoff experience, and Malcolm Brown, unanimous All-American in college at Texas. They've added him to give themselves D-line depth. They got Teddy Bridgewater to spurn going to his hometown Miami Dolphins and got him to come back to serve as Drew Brees' backup. And now they were trying to lock up Jared Cook. But they're also making small deals. And we've talked about this on the show before. They got Chris Banjo, and they locked him up, one of their special teams stars. They got Craig Robertson, special teams captain, and backup linebacker that helps them with the depth there at that position. They got Justin Hardy, who's an emerging guy in the secondary. He's also a special team star. They locked up those guys. They got Will Lutz, their kicker, gave him a 5-year contract extension as well. Special teams has been a big priority for this team, and it was so again yesterday. Little minor move that they did. The Saints signed punt returner Marcus Shrells from the Minnesota Vikings. And it's by reports, it says it's just a 1-year deal. But for a team that's locking up their gunners and the guys that are making the tackles on special teams and then locking up their kicker, the Saints have struggled the last 2 seasons. They have actually ranked in the bottom 10 in returns on special teams in the entire NFL. And Marcus Shrells is one of the better returners. He's a top 10 returner in this league year in and year out. He's played his entire career with the Minnesota Vikings. He's a former University of Minnesota star. To get him on the cheap for a 1-year deal, this just once again solidifies their special teams unit. And they're continuing making small moves. And I know you're going to think, well, that's not a glamorous move. That's not even as sexy as a move as the Jared Cook move. And the Jared Cook move, in all honesty, is not exactly a headline grabber, right? It's a need that they're filling. They're taking care of a position of need. That way they can enter the draft and just take best player available. And they'll have a little bit more flexibility there because they're not going to be handcuffed to draft a certain position. Exactly correct. But what this continues to show me is that they're making smart mid-level to low-level moves, and those are the kind of moves that helps your depth of your roster. Those are the types of moves that help lay the foundation for championship teams. The stars get all the headlines, rightfully so in a lot of ways. But it's these other moves, improving your special teams. What if Marcus can just come in and get them an additional 2.3 yards a return? And you're thinking, well, that's not a big deal. Well, that's 2.3 yards less than Drew Brees and the offense have to go down the field, right? It's little things like that. It's re-signing Craig Robertson and Justin Hardy and Chris Banjo. By the way, name Hall of Fame Chris Banjo. Getting those guys, maybe they make a tackle. Maybe you lock them up and they're able to prevent that big return. That helps your team. Locking up your kicker and giving him the confidence that he's going to stay a New Orleans Saints for a while. Kickers are kind of a weird bunch, right? They just are. Well, you lock him up, that gives him the confidence. Maybe he, Will Lutz, takes his game to the next level. You bring in Jared Cook coming off a career year. Well, now he gets to play with Drew Brees. And maybe he'll see the role of, I get to be Drew Brees' big target. Maybe I can put up some Jimmy Graham-like numbers. Also, the Shrells signing is interesting because it's the third guy that the Saints have poached from the Minnesota Vikings this offseason. First, it was Latavius Murray, the power running back from the Minnesota Vikings that they signed as Mark Ingram's replacement. Then they signed Nick Easton, the versatile center/guard, who's going to be taking Max Unger's place, who Max retired. So they poached three guys from the Minnesota Vikings, not to mention that they got Teddy Bridgewater, a former Minnesota Viking, last year, and they brought him back this year. Another move that's interesting is what they've been able to do with Cameron Meredith. Now, remember, they made the move for Cam Meredith, young slot wide receiver who was playing for the Chicago Bears. And they made that move last year. He was injured when they went after him as a restricted free agent, which means they had to give up, a low-level draft pick as compensation. And Chicago had an opportunity to match New Orleans' offer for the young man. The Bears decided not to. He came over to the New Orleans Saints. And expectations were he was going to fall right in line and he was going to be that great slot receiver that they've been missing. They really haven't had – they needed that in this offense they do. You got Michael Thomas on the outside. No one can guard Mike, okay? But they were hoping Cam Meredith could step up in that slot receiver role and just give them even more depth and let Traquan Smith develop as the number two on the other far side. That didn't happen. Meredith was banged up all of last year, slow to recover from his offseason surgery that they already knew about, and then he got injured again and was shut down for the remainder of the year. He only caught 9 balls for 114 yards and 1 touchdown. And they were paying him a lot of money to deal with a player with knee issues that couldn't get on the field, especially when other guys stepped up in his spot. Well, they got Cam Meredith to restructure his contract. He played in just 6 games due to the knee issues last year. He agreed to a pay cut that trims his base salary and frees up cap space. And that's according to ESPN's Field Yates. The new deal reduces his base salary from $3.4 million to $1.3 million. That's huge for a team that's had to deal with salary cap issues. Remember, they were only roughly over $9 million in cap space entering free agency. They had Drew Brees restructure his contract. They're going to have to deal with all that dead money next year, okay? If Drew retires, like Andrew Juge told us yesterday from the Saints Happy Hour podcast on the show, he said, you know, if Drew retires, then that dead cap money will be cut in half, so it'll only be like a $24 million hit next season, 2020. So they're kicking the can down the road. But they freed up that Drew Brees money to be able to make a lot of these moves, and now they got Cam Meredith to take nearly $2 million less in base salary. Now, if you remember, the Saints signed the former Bears player to a 2-year, $9.6 million deal last season, and he was recovering from a torn ACL the season before. So they're still optimistic about him. This shows me that the New Orleans Saints, they could have cut him to free up some cap space, but they restructured the deal. Cam took a pay cut to stay on the roster, and I think it's beneficial for both, and I'll tell you why. If the Saints can get anything out of Cam and have him develop into the slot wide receiver, it's gravy, right? It's gravy. You already got Michael Thomas on the outside. Traquan Smith showed flashes, but it's always tough for rookies. I know you're kind of spoiled with the way Marcus Colston performed as a rookie for the Saints, and then Michael Thomas performed as a rookie for the Saints. Most rookie wide receivers, they struggle. They just do. They have to adjust to facing elite defenders, elite corners, okay? And then they also have to learn how to run routes. It's a lot to take. The wide receiver position, you know, we always talk about when you're drafting guys in the first round, NFL franchises, we put so much emphasis on quarterbacks that one of the positions that struggles just as much as quarterbacks and that you need to give time to develop is wide receiver. just look at the history of the NFL draft and you look at first-round draft picks, wide receivers, there's a lot of bust on there because it's a difficult transition to make. Not everyone can do it. So you still got Tre'Quan Smith, though. He was a third or fourth-round pick, so you got him on that favorable rookie deal, right? Just like you got Michael Thomas on his rookie deal. But say you got Thomas on the outside and you got Tre'Quan on the other. Well, we saw what Kirkwood did as an undrafted rookie out of Temple this past season. Well, he gives you an option. And now if you can have Cam Meredith out there, and he can give you anything and kind of take over that slot wide receiver role, well, now you got four guys who can catch the ball. You got four legit wide receivers out there. And you're adding Jared Cook at tight end. So now you got five. Oh, you got Alvin Kamara as your starting running back. Now you got six. So for Cam, he restructures the deal. He gets to stay with the Saints, tries to get a career back on track. And that's the other thing here. You take a little bit of a pay cut. You can prove to everyone that you're healthy. Maybe he can prove to the Saints that he's healthy, and they'll try to re-sign him. But also, he's going to be playing for a contract from somebody else, too, if the Saints don't. So he's going to take a little bit of money now. He's going to take a gamble on himself and hoping that he can prove to everyone that he is, in fact, a healthy wide receiver and he's worthy of another contract. If they just cut him and he accepted being cut and, you know, everything like that, he may not even got on someone else's roster. Once again, this also frees up more cap space for the Saints to lock up Jared Cook and add another option and another guy. And I don't think the Saints are done. They've been very, very busy during this free agency period, and rightfully so, and they've been making moves, restructuring contracts, bringing guys back, signing guys. They're not the biggest hires. They're not going to make the biggest splash. This isn't the Washington Redskins or the Dallas Cowboys or some team that needs to make a big splash every offseason. Saints don't need to do that. They're being smart with their free agency, how they're approaching this, and I can't wait to see what they're going to do in the draft. And we'll talk a little bit more about what they're possibly going to be doing in the draft coming up in this next segment, because an interesting development happened yesterday. Friend of the show, Alex Hickey, who used to work at the Lake Charles American Press and used to work for SEC Country, he now works covering West Virginia. Well, they had their pro day up there in couch-burning country. A lot of scouts came. Obviously, you know about Will Grier, the quarterback. The team with the most scouts at West Virginia's pro day was the New Orleans Saints with 9. Why? I'll kind of dive a little bit into that right here after this break on the Wrap Game with RP3, broadcasting live from La Triomphe Golf and Country Club here in Broussard for the Chittimacha Louisiana Open. Welcome back to the Wrap Game with RP3. I am your host, Raymond Parch III, broadcasting live from La Triomphe Golf and Country Club here in Broussard, home of the Chittimacha Louisiana Open, presented by Mistras. Got a little fog rolling through the golf course right now. They'll be teeing off here for the second round here shortly, in about 35 minutes. Second round action here of one of the premier events on the web.com tour. We'll talk more about that with Kevin Prize from the PGAtour.com. He'll be joining us to start off the second hour coming up at 7:02. But before we close things out of the first hour and get to that, I want to talk about Morgantown, West Virginia. I know. First of all, who the hell wants to talk about Morgantown, West Virginia? I understand what you're thinking. West Virginia had its pro day yesterday. Something caught my attention. The New Orleans Saints had the most scouts by anyone there. All the NFL teams, the majority of them were represented there. The Pittsburgh Steelers had 6 scouts there, but it's a little bit easier, as our friend Alex Hickey tweeted out, to get from Pittsburgh to West Virginia than it is to get from New Orleans to West Virginia. And the big headliner yesterday was quarterback Will Grier, who apparently had himself a hell of a day at the pro day. People expect him now to soar up the draft boards, and he's going to be a first-round draft pick. So why were the Saints there? Are they looking at Will Grier as a possible replacement for Drew Brees? Is that what you're thinking? You're thinking, well, Will Grier's the star guy. Actually, no. From Hickey's reports, Grier did not meet with the New Orleans Saints. Now, the Saints had 9 scouts at West Virginia's Pro Day. So who are they there for? If it's not Will Grier, who's going to be soaring up the draft boards because everyone needs a quarterback. Apparently, the Saints were there to check out 2 different guys, both offensive playmakers. One is David Sills. Sills is a wide receiver. He's caught a bunch of balls from Will Grier. He ran his routes, did some things. He had a little bit of tightness, but Sills was able to demonstrate his strengths as a route runner. Quote, this is from Sills, "The combine routes are pretty generic, and you don't get that many reps," Sills said. "I felt like that I could show I could run NFL routes, and I could do it on a high level. We didn't have any balls hit the ground other than when I cramped up on that last one." Hickey's reporting that the Saints, who had that league-high 9 front office reps and scouts in attendance, were among the teams with multiple sets of eyes focused solely on Sills. So the Saints are looking at adding a wide receiver, which would also make sense that Cam Meredith decided to restructure that deal. So to me, this tells me that the Saints are not satisfied with what their wide receiving core is. Yes, they love Michael Thomas. The guy's an all-pro. He's a franchise cornerstone. And they love what they got out of Kirkwood last year as the undrafted rookie free agent out of Temple. They just took Traquan Smith last year in the 3rd round. And they just got Cam Meredith to restructure his deal. And there's talk of maybe even bringing back Dez Bryant. But they feel like the young man out of West Virginia, David Sills, could be a guy that they could draft. And if they have all their needs taken care of, maybe they do some wheeling and dealing with those picks, trade up to get a guy that they think could be a difference maker and put them over the top, very much in the same vein that they did last year when they traded away a future first-round pick to trade up to get Marcus Davenport out of UTSA, the pass rusher. He's now going to be expected to be a full-time starter in year 2 after Alex Okafor walked in free agency and signed with the Kansas City Chiefs. Another name to keep an eye out for that the Saints may be interested in is Trayvon Wesco. Wesco worked out primarily as a fullback at the Senior Bowl, but the big fella, and I say big fella, has versatility as a pass catcher. And apparently, according to Alex Hickey, he demonstrated that at the pro day. Wesco, who's like 6'4" and 269 pounds. That's a big old boy. That's a big old target. He showed his route running, and he also showed his ability to be able to haul in catches. One scout was said, that's a money catch. He just made himself some money. Wesco came into a senior season with only 2 career catches. Primarily used as a fullback, big fella. He ended up having this last year 26 reps for 366 yards. He's also becoming somewhat of a cult figure by draft analysts, says Alex Hickey, as they review his game film. So, the Saints were there in West Virginia looking at possibly adding some depth at wide receiver and a guy that they may look at drafting in David Sills. And even though you sign Jared Cook, you know, Jared Cook's north of 30. If you can get Trayvon Wesco, this big, humongous human being, 6'5", 6'4", 6'5", 269 pounds, that can run crisp routes and is kind of a unfinished product. Reminds you a lot of Jimmy Graham, doesn't it? Jimmy Graham only had the 1 season of football at the University of Miami. He was a basketball player. He only had the 1 season of football under his belt when the Saints drafted him. Remember that. And Sean Payton likes projects. And he likes taking guys and turning them into something, like Marcus Colston out of the 6th round, or like Jimmy Graham, who was a basketball player who briefly only played football. This Wesco kid, he kind of fits that bill. Big freakish athlete. that Sean Payton can develop into something special. Just something to think on when the draft comes around later this year. First hour's in the books. It's time to go on to the second hour here of the Wrap Game with RP3, broadcasting live from La Triomphe Golf and Country Club here in Broussard, home of the Chittimacha Louisiana Open, presented by Mistros. Our good friend Kevin Prize from the PGAtour.com is going to join us to start the second hour right here on 103.7 The Game.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette, we are Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game, KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time to step your game up.
Boy, you wouldn't know how to write your name if it wasn't
stepped on your locker.
It's Rap Game with RP3, Raymond Parts III.
One of God's own prototypes. High-powered mutant of some kind never even considered for mass production. Too weird to live, too rare to die.
Want to interact? Call in at 337-706-0111.
We have it? Yeah, we have it.
RP3 is taking the mic and bringing you to the center of the sports world on Rap Game with RP3 on 103.7 The Game and 1037thegame.com.
You just got to keep living, man. L-I-V-I-N.
I'll tell you what I'm blathering about. I've got information, man.
Welcome back to the Rap Game with RP3. I'm your host, Raymond Parts III, broadcasting live from La Triomphe Golf and Country Club here in Broussard, home of the Chittimacha Louisiana Open, presented by Mistros. First round teed off yesterday out here at the lovely course, and a man who's been covering this tournament now for 5 years, straight years, is joining us now live here at the 103.7 The Game trailer out here at La Triomphe. He is a Syracuse grad. I know last night was a bit much, but we'll talk about that. A Syracuse grad. He works for the PGA Digital Division, covering events, shooting videos, all that good stuff. He's a pro's pro, and we're happy to have him on the show. Let's welcome on Kevin Prize to the Rap Game. Kevin, how are you this morning, brother?
I am great, Raymond. Thank you so much for having me. Honored to be here.
So we'll go ahead. We'll focus in on the golf tournament, but let's talk about the NCAA tournament. not a great night for your Orange last night, my friend. I knew there was some when Jim had to suspend one of your best players the day of the game or the day right before the game. I knew that was going to be a tough matchup versus Baylor. How tough was that for you to take, brother, watching them lose in the first round for the first time since 2006?
I mean, yeah, I think it was eight times in a row they had won a first round game, so you're just not used to that. You know, that was in high school when that happened, and we were down 11 early, so once we got back and took the lead near halftime, I thought we were going to pull it out. I really did. We were shooting well, but Frank Howard, we missed him for sure. And I mean, we've had so many deep runs as a double digit seed, so I can't really like sit here and
complain.
Like, oh, well, yeah, I'm a Buffalo sports fan, Bills and Sabres, who do not do well. So Syracuse basketball is like my top, you know, my shining beacon of sports fanhood. So they have a title, they have plenty of Final Fours, and being from Buffalo, I'm excited for the Buffalo Bulls. They've had a good year too.
They're
playing today, so I'll root for them.
Yeah, against their former coach.
Bobby Hurley.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
Against Bobby.
Who brought him in. Bobby
That's
Hurley
right.
brought in Nate Oates, and now Nate Oates is trying to take him down after leaving Buffalo for the quote-unquote greener pastures, but
yeah,
it'll be a good game.
It's not really worked out all that well at Arizona State.
I mean, Buffalo's got the higher seed, so good for us.
Yeah, we're sitting here talking to Kevin Prize. He's a digital content producer for the Web.com Tour and the PGA Tour. He's also co-host of Golf's Next Wave podcast.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about this tournament. You've covered it now. This is your fifth year to be out here at La Triomphe and covering the Chittimacha Louisiana Open. In that time, you know, you got to know the guys on the tour. You've been gotten familiar with the guys who've won this tournament. Let's start there. Why do you think this tournament is so appealing for so many of the guys on the tour?
You have we go all throughout the country and the world and crisscrossing different places, and it's definitely not the easiest travel schedule. So when you come to a community where you feel like they really appreciate you being there and have the hospitality that you guys have here, it really is second to none. It's not just a cliche you start off Tuesday night and Wednesday with the pro-am food and everyone's in a good mood with the mock shoe and the crawfish etouffee and all that cool stuff you don't get anywhere else. And it's just, easy to get around here. There's nothing. They've been here a while, so there's familiarity with the club and the course and the tournament staff. And it's just one of those things people know, and word spreads throughout the tour that this is just a tournament you don't want to miss. So it's, I think that's built up over time, and the veterans kind of set that tone for the rookies coming up, and everyone comes to here happy to be here. And it's one of the first ones in the United States as well, after being in the Bahamas and Panama and Bogota and most years Mexico, where there's not as, you know, there are more logistical challenges. And this year we did have a tournament in Sarasota, Florida before this, which is different than what it's been like most years. But overall, that local vibe, I mean, it's, you know, a small, even though it's a city, it's a small town vibe more or less. And the web.com tour, you know, being on the way up to the PGA Tour is kind of that ethos. So it all fits together very well.
Kevin, let's talk a little bit about, you know, this tour is also really good, and this tournament in particular has always had a tradition of serving as somewhat of a kind of a launching pad for the younger guys, as well as maybe some more of those veteran golfers that are trying to transition into the next stage of their career. Perfect example is this year, Mike Rear, Masters champion, one of the best, most accomplished golfers in Canadian history. We know he's here because this is that new transition for the Web.com Tour, where they're helping push guys into the Champions Tour. Can you give us a little bit more about that and how that came to be, where the Web.com Tour is now kind of serving as kind of a bridge for that?
Mm-hmm. So the idea behind that bridge, they have this category of 48 to 49-year-old, right, three spots per tournament goes off the PGA Tour career money list. And the theory is these guys from the PGA Tour having these long, accomplished careers, you've done well enough where you deserve to have a place to play. But on the PGA Tour, the past champion category might not get into many events. You know, a guy like Mike Weir, Boo Weekly, they'll get into a few PGA Tour events, but not be able to play a whole schedule, and they want you competitive when you move to the PGA Tour champions to the 50 and older. So it gives you that nice opportunity to give a few guys a chance to play, and with just
get reps, essentially keep them sharp and keep them fresh, mm-hmm, for when they move on.
Absolutely.
It's also, like you said, for the younger stars. We've seen, you and I have both seen it here at this tournament. A guy like Wesley Bryan comes to mind. He was known on social media for the trick shot videos with him and his brother. His brother served as his caddy here for that tournament, and that was his first web.com win. He ends up being the player of the year, and now he's on the PGA Tour, and he's already won an event there. We've seen other guys like Kaufman come through, Sam Burns last year. These younger guys are using this, and in particularly this tournament. Why is that? I know you're saying, like, it's about the hospitality, but there's the challenges of this course seems to kind of bring the best out of these younger guys and helps maybe better prepare them to make that leap up. Why is that?
It's definitely got some unique challenges here at Le Triomphe. It's not particularly long. Nothing is particularly challenging as opposed to the normal tour course, but it's just a well-rounded test. You have to drive it well or you can get in trouble. There's plenty of birdie chances, but also some hard holes. Obviously, 13 and 14, that stretch, yeah, it's classic, but those are always the two hardest and two of the toughest holes on the web.com tour. And you have to go pretty low without it being a course that provides too many birdie opportunities. So you have to be able to hit your short to middle irons pretty close to the hole. You're not going to make that many putts out here with the greens having, you know, challenges and undulation. So over time, it brings out on the leaderboards a good variety of players, of veterans and rookies, and kind of a good reflection of the web.com tour demographic overall. And then you see it time after time, and it's just a product of how many guys there are on the web.com tour that are good enough for the PGA Tour and will get there. So week to week, any web.com tour leaderboard is going to kind of have that breakup. And I always say, in, you know, the NFL there's 1500 players, and pro baseball there might be 600 players. On the hockey, same thing. On the PGA Tour there's only 150 players. There are more than 150 guys qualified to play at the highest level of golf, and they come here to the web.com tour. So that's why you see such a high level of play and so many guys that you'll see. And then Keith Mitchell, who won the Honda Classic 2 weeks ago, he was playing out here as recently as 2 years ago at Le Triomphe. So it's a super fine line.
We're talking to Kevin Price. He's joining us here. He's the digital content producer for the web.com tour and the PGA Tour, and he's also co-host of the Golf's Next Wave podcast. The other thing I find interesting is you and I have seen this firsthand, and we've been on the course where we see a leader, especially on Saturday, and then comes 13, 14, and then 15, and those crosswinds on the back nine wreak havoc on these guys, especially because I don't think they expect it. I think that's the weird thing, and then they get out there, and they're like, oh, I'm going to use my approach shot, and I'm going to do this, and all of a sudden that ball goes, whew, and it just kind of derails around. Talk a little bit about those holes, those 13, 14, and that stretch, and part of it's the crosswinds. We talked to Casey Wittenberg the other day for Media Day, and he's been able to kind of not master it. He's one of only two guys that have won this tournament twice, but he says, you know, you have to know how to attack the wind and how to attack with those crosswinds. Is that one of the biggest factors here, is the wind out here and guys maybe not prepared for it?
It's one of the course, it has its quirks in the firmness, and balls can roll out a little bit more than you might be expecting. So when you're taking the wind into the account, and granted, I'm not a PGA Tour pro, so I can't speak to as high regard as the pros might, but you can definitely have short irons into the hole. Like, I think Vince Covello, who was 8-under yesterday, said he hit just 155 into 13, and it's a, you know, 500-yard hole, so right. He got a lot of roll, but you have to be careful, and there's trees that kind of cut in, and if you're under a branch where you have to hit a low shot, or you're going to be chipping out and have to get up and down for par. So a lot of it is the matter of driving it well off the tee. If you have a good drive, the hole becomes not that difficult, but trying to evaluate the wind and between the wind and the firmness and what type of shot you're trying to hit, it's just a lot to think about. And sometimes it just requires maybe a little bit of luck to get the right bounce. And if you don't get the right bounce, you're going to be looking at doing really well to make par. So it's just a couple holes you really have to step up and just hit a perfect shot. And that's hard. It's hard to do.
Another kind of thing about this, unique thing about this golf course, or in particular the tournament, when they lay it out, is the par threes are far more important than the par fives, because the par fives are easy to make birdies, or easy may not be the right word. It's not as difficult right to get birdies there. But so many times have we seen guys get birdies on those par fives, and then they bogey the par threes. And, you know, Casey was talking about that the other day, that says the par threes are more important. Like, you have to make sure to get par on those holes. Like, you can't mess around with the par threes. Why is that? Why are the par threes here so difficult for these guys?
I think it's just, I wouldn't say they're particularly difficult compared to the rest of the Web.com Tour, but they're definitely a stern test. You have to hit good shots. They're not short by any means, so you have to hit middle irons into them and with the bunkers around, and if you get short-sighted, the chip from some of these lies, it's going to be hard to get it to 3 or 4 feet. Not quite sure how the ball is going to react out of that rough and how it's going to check once it gets up to the green. So it's just it's tough to hit the green. It's a far enough shot on most of the par threes out here where it's not a given to hit the green. You have to hit it crisp, and then the up and down, I think that's the biggest thing. The up and downs are tougher around these par threes than they would at a lot of other Web.com Tour courses because of the way the lie is, and they're not used as much to this type of grass. This course reminds us a lot of the Panama Championship, actually, down in Central America, where it can get pretty firm in some bounces, and you have to be smart about where to play and where to miss, because if you don't, you're going to have these tough up and downs, and you see that a lot on these par threes.
Kevin, we'll wrap it up with this. Who impressed you yesterday during the first round? Who impressed you, and who was kind of a surprise for you?
So there's a guy, Paul Haley, was pretty impressive. He's a guy who, I wouldn't say surprised because he's done it before, but he was out here in 2012 on the Web.com Tour, first year out of Georgia Tech, won a tournament, got his PGA Tour card 2013, battled some struggles with the driver, and talked yesterday about losing confidence, and it goes quick, and he fell all the way from the PGA Tour back down to the mini tours and Monday qualifiers, and this is his first year back on the Web.com Tour since 2015, and he shot 64 yesterday, which ties his career low round ever on the Web.com Tour, so that was definitely impressive. And then, I mean, the leader, Vince Covello, obviously, he's been a veteran out here for a long time, never got his PGA Tour card. A win here could really change a guy like Vince Covello's life, and he was at the Players Championship last week as a fan, watching some friends who he saw out here, Adam Long and Denny McCarthy, Abe Anser from just a couple years ago, so that motivated him to get out here. And then, I mean, in terms of a surprise, I can't really pinpoint a player that I'd be surprised that they struggled per se, because it's golf and it's hard. And
right.
Our guys, you know, most guys are going to miss a couple cuts here and there. So I've been out here, not a veteran, but a few years now, that you don't get surprised when you see someone shoot a bad round, because you know you're going to have a few of those throughout the year in golf. So I can't pick one guy, because I can't, like, pigeonhole anyone. And in golf's hard, and you're going to shoot a couple high ones.
Kevin, I appreciate you making some time for us, brother. I know you're out here working it and grinding it, but I appreciate you making some time for us here on the show, and I hope you enjoy the rest of the weekend. And I told you this earlier in the week, man. We've known each other now for a few years. You apparently continue to lose weight, and apparently that weight's getting transferred over to me.
Oh, no.
Now, it probably didn't help that I had, you know, I made sure to get 12 wings yesterday when I went to Twin Peaks for an LSU watch party for the station. So maybe I should just get some tips from you on how to properly diet.
No. If I lived here, I would not be losing weight. No way. I try to lose a few pounds each week before I get here so I can gain a few back.
Nice.
Here in Acadiana. I love the name of the region, too. Acadiana. It's awesome. But, yeah, I love this place.
Kevin, appreciate you coming on, brother. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Kevin Price with the PGA Digital team. And you make sure you can give them a follow on the Twitter at WebTourKevin. That's right. And you know he's the real deal because he's got the blue check mark next to his name, ladies and gentlemen. So follow him for all types of updates for this weekend's tournament as well as tournaments moving forward. When we come back, we'll keep it going here on the Wrap Game with RP3 live from La Triomphe Golf and Country Club. I'll have my rant of the week. You don't want to miss it right here on 103.7 The Game.
Let me tell you something. You know what really grinds my gears?
Uh-oh. RP3 is ready to sound off.
Serenity now! Serenity now! Serenity now! Serenity now! Serenity now! Serenity now!
This is more than a complaint, but less than a tirade. This is Ray's Rant of the Week.
Where do I begin, ladies and gentlemen? Where do I begin? It's time for me to talk about this tournament. I love this tournament. I've been covering the Chittimacha Louisiana Open, now presented by Mistras, for 5 years now. I love being out here, and I've said it before, and I've said it all week. I've covered the Shell Houston Open. I've covered the Zurich Classic as a member of the media. And look, those are top-notch tournaments as well, PGA Tour. They do a great job. So when I tell you that this tournament is comparable in a lot of ways, I'm not blowing smoke. I'm being real. I've enjoyed it out here. The hospitality is top-notch. Danny Jones and the rest of his staff and all the hundreds of volunteers, they do a tremendous job out here. Also, the golfers are great to deal with. They're accommodating. They talk to us. They also spend hours. I've seen it. They just get done with a round. I've seen guys get done with a round where they've played themselves out of contention and they're going to be nowhere near the top 10, and yet they still take time out to sign hats and gloves and golf balls and balloons or whatever else is made available for the kids. It's a well-run tournament. Dan McDonald does a tremendous job, the Louisiana Sports Hall of Famer, with helping promote this tournament and reporting on it. There's nothing not to love about the Chittimacha Louisiana Open, except for one thing. More people need to come out to it. They do a tremendous job marketing this tournament. Media covers it like it's one of the biggest events in the state, whether it's us out here with the 103.7 The Game trailer, or whether it's multiple media outlets, TV, radio, print media, digital. So it gets all the coverage. It's a great tournament. Beautiful golf course. And yet, I find people in the community that will sit there and complain about not having anything to do. Will complain about not having anything in Acadiana sports-wise to go check out on this weekend. There's no excuse. if you love sports and you're a fan of golf, hell, even if you're not a fan of golf, if you come out here and you get a ticket and you come out to the Chittimacha Louisiana Open, I guarantee you, after you've done that, you're going to become a fan of golf. I guarantee it. I talk to people all the time. Oh, yeah, that's the golf tournament going on. Yeah, you know, I see the advertising. I hear it on the radio. I hear you guys talk about it on 103.7 The Game. I see stories on the website. I see stories in other newspapers and everything like that. But, you know, I just have never come out. No excuse. This is one of the premier events on the web.com tour. This is big boy golf. Straight up. You're going to see future stars. Guys that are going to play in this field, younger guys coming out of college, moving their way up, whether it was like Wesley Bryant or Sam Burns or whoever it may be. You're going to see guys in this field. When you come out here and you sit in the stands out here around 18, or if you're going to walk the course on the back nine, you're going to sit there and see guys that you're going to see on television with Jim Nance talking about them in a couple years. This is what this tournament does. This is what this tournament's about. You're going to have the well-known guys, like we talked about. Now they have these the arrangement to have a kind of a transition period to have guys go on to the Champions Tour. You're going to have big-name guys, but you're going to have some of the future faces of professional golf come to this tournament. They love coming to this tournament, and they kind of make their bones, so to speak, right here in Acadiana, in your backyard. I understand there's lots of stuff to do in Acadiana. I get it. I've heard that excuse so many times. I get it. And if you want to go catch the Raging Cajuns baseball this weekend, I understand that too. But why not come out to the golf tournament beforehand during the day for some beautiful weather, a terrific round of golf, and some of the best young talent in the game? Trust me on this. Trust me. Stop having reservations about it. Stop having trepidation. Get off your butt. Come out here. Get a ticket. And come out to the Chittimacha Louisiana Open presented by Mistras. You will not regret it, ladies and gentlemen. That's my rant of the week. When we come back, we're going to talk to Jim Gavzalo. He covers McNeese State over in Lake Chuck. When we come back here on the Rap Game with RP3 broadcasting live from La Triomphe Golf and Country Club right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to the Rap Game with RP3. I am your host, Raymond Parch III, broadcasting live from La Triomphe Golf and Country Club here in Broussard, home of the Chittimacha Louisiana Open, presented by Mistras. It's time to welcome on our next guest. He was the former longtime sports editor of the Lake Charles American Press. These days, he is the host of Eye on Sports Friday nights starting at 10:05 there in Lake Charles on CBS. He's got the night off tonight, though, because of the NCAA tournament, so he's going to make some time for us. It's the one and only Jim Gavzalo. Jim, how are you this morning, brother?
Good, Raymond. How you doing? What do you got? RP3? Nice.
Jim, appreciate you making some time for us, man. Look, there's a couple things I wanted to kind of touch base with you on that's going on over there with the Cowpokes. First things first, let's talk about the softball team. They got themselves a huge victory against the Raging Cajuns here the other night, an 11-inning affair. They take down the number 9 team in the country in the Raging Cajuns. How significant was that midweek victory for this season's McNeese State softball team?
Well, for the fan base, it's huge because it's Lafayette, McNeese. But, you know, for one thing about this team's very young, and it's a completely different team. There's no Erica Piastrada to hit home runs and score runs. So it's really finding itself. For that alone, I think it's a big win for them to see they can win games different ways than last year. And I think that's going to be important moving forward for them.
Jim, I know when you talk about these two teams, the Cowboys and and the Cajuns, regardless if it's softball, baseball, basketball, or football, this is a long-standing rivalry. And if you talk to older fans around here in Acadiana, they love when the Raging Cajuns and the Cowboys meet. They would like them to play every year. And they traditionally do in baseball, softball. We know Tony Robichaux started his career, his storied career, at McNeese State. And he makes sure to is always making sure to play them. The softball teams make sure to play each other as well. Not so much in football. It's not on a regular basis. But can you give us a little insight from the folks there in Lake Charles what this rivalry means to them? Why is it so important to them?
Well, for them, for people here, it's the traditional rivalry. It's the neighborhood guy. It's kind of it's a weird relationship because it's McNeese feels itself as big brother for years, dominating, especially in football. And then it watched as the little brother kind of passed it by, but they won't admit that it passed them by. And they see themselves as equals, especially when it comes to football, especially when it comes to the past. And I think there's a little inferiority complex with people from here because of that. Oh, look what they've done. And I think there's some of the people now that have said, we should have done that. So I think there's a little bit more here to the rivalry than over there on all levels.
We're talking to Jim Gonzalo. He is the host of I Own Sports there on the CBS affiliate there in Lake Charles every Friday night starting at 10:05. He has the night off tonight, but he'll be back on the air next week. Jim, let's talk a little bit about that. You know, the softball team, these two teams will face each other once again on April 3rd there at Joe Miller Field for the softball team, and I know the baseball team is going to face off once again. Tell us a little bit about this year's softball team. You kind of touched on it. They don't have their superstar player. They're a young team. What's the potential of this year's team? Are you already seeing it, kind of seeing them kind of turning a corner and kind of developing into what this team is going to be about?
Well, the one thing about softball at this university is it is ahead of everybody else at playing tough competition early, going and playing people and getting better during the year. That's one thing that was established under Mike Smith years ago when he came here. So what you're seeing is a team that, as they go into the Southland Conference, has built up a lot of, I don't know if it's all confidence, but has at least played in big games and big settings. So they never, even though they're young, they don't get overwhelmed by the conference itself. So the potential is still the same. The main thing for them is they have three players on the mound that pitched last year. So they can go through a weekend without repeating pitchers. And I think that's a big advantage for them. They throw strikes, and they understand what it is to win in the Southland Conference because they've won before there. The one thing about this program is they've now gotten to the level where getting to the NCAA tournament is no longer the goal. It's to win some games in the NCAA tournament because they've done the other. And I think that's where you're going to see if this team can reach that level moving forward is can they actually make some noise in the tournament because they expect to be there almost every year now.
Yeah, that's the thing with the expectations, right? Once you establish amount of success, then people are going to expect more, not only from the fan base, but then also from the administration. Because after a while, you may be okay with, hey, we made it to the NCAA tournament. That's great. Well, now let's win a game, or let's win a series, or let's make it to, you know, the College World Series.
Yeah, I think that's what you're seeing here is, and as you see, what you've seen in the town itself and at the school is a growth in facilities. The baseball, they put $1 million into the baseball field in the last 3 years. They put money into the softball fields. They obviously have a new basketball arena. I think there's money coming in to the facilities, and I think fans are starting to say, okay, we've given you a couple years now. Let's see some for our dollar. And that'll be interesting to see if they can continue that growth.
Jim, let's talk a little bit about the baseball team. They've already played the Raging Cajuns. We know once they lost that 16-10 kind of epic game back on March 6th. They'll be playing again on
April. I don't know if I call it epic or.
Well, a lot of runs were scored. a lot of runs were scored, and then they'll face each other again on April the 10th. Tell us a little bit about this year's baseball team.
I think the big thing about this baseball team is that Shane Selman came back. He was a 38th round pick of the Red Sox. He elected not to start his career, but to play his fourth year. I think that stabilized an offense that can score a lot of runs. They have a kid named Nate Fishbeck that leads them off. That really is pretty good as far as a leadoff hitter goes, gets on base, can hit for some power. They got a couple of junior college kids that came in that can really add to their offense. It's like everything else. Can they find three consistent starters to get them six, seven innings on the weekends? Rhett Deek comes back from injury and has thrown the ball pretty well this year. I think they anticipate being in the running for the Southland. Under Justin Hill, they've always won 30 games except for last year. So that was their first time they've kind of taken a step back. It'll be interesting to see how they respond to that. But really, if they get decent pitching, I think they'll score enough runs to be competitive against anybody. But that's always the college baseball thing, is you get the pitching.
We're on with Jim Gonzalo. Jim, I want to talk. Let's switch over to football. Definitely the divorce between Lance Guidry and the administration was an ugly one, and it's continued to have a little bit of fallout here. New Iberia's own and one of the best to ever play for McNeese State, Kerry Joseph, made the announcement yesterday that he's officially joined the staff at Southeastern Louisiana. He joins his former roommate in college and his former head coach there at McNeese State, the man who he was an assistant for the last few years, goes over to a conference rival, I guess. How did that news go over there in Lake Charles that the Lions have poached yet another former McNeese State Cowboy and added them to their coaching staff?
I think it's been expected here for quite some time. It was kind of in the works. I think with this regime, I don't think much is cared about to what happened in the past, so I don't think it's looked at as a big a deal within the administration as it is maybe on the fan base, because Kerry had a lot of fans behind him, and a lot of people thought he should have gotten a chance to coach here and continue coaching here. So I think it's more of a fan thing than it is anything else. But you're right, the divorce was quick, it was painful, and it was surprising on all levels until you start hearing the stories about how it broke down. I think it may have been inevitable from almost the first day, from what I hear. And I think that the interesting thing is the cut from the fact that they were former McNeese players and the way they were kind of treated, I think, was a bit of a shock to a lot of people. And it is definitely a direct – what we're seeing is a direct turn from – what I used to call next McNeese person up to an administration that is going out and trying at least to get new blood into their organizations.
But that's always a tricky thing to do, right, Jim, especially with boosters and with supporters?
Yeah, there's no question about it that for every fan, but this is a weird town now, because this town has so much newcomers coming in that you are a divided town. You have half the people that are upset that they left, and half the people are saying, hey, good, I'm new to the town, let's see what's going on. But I think that's the interesting thing is, I don't think they're going to be given as much of a window to win as, say, Lance Guidry was. I think they have to turn it around. This new group under Sterling Gilbert have to turn it around a little bit quicker because of that. And the conference, the Southland Conference, is completely different now. It's not one or two teams. There's five or six teams that have gone young, have gone up-tempo, have gone younger coaches, and brought in new life to a conference. And it's not one or two teams battling now. You're going to see these new teams with the new coaches and the new quarterbacks coming in, changing the whole outlook of the conference.
Jim, let's talk a little bit about something that I was surprised to read about and to see. B.J. Blunt has been one of the best Cowboys in recent memory. Went to the East-West Shrine Game. He was the Conference Player of the Year, team captain, well-respected guy. He's trying to make his way to the NFL. It's McNeese's best chance of getting a guy drafted, and yet he did not take part in the Pro Day this week and instead opted to take part in Tulane's Pro Day the next day. What can you tell us about that? Because That seems extremely peculiar to me.
From all I can gather, it was a personal choice. I think it has to do with the fact that I think it'd be naive to say Lance Guidry's firing didn't change his thoughts on that. So I think that's part of it as much as anything else. I think that you have a situation where he was loyal to his coach as much as anything. And timing-wise, I know he's been working out in New Orleans. I just think he decided, I don't really have anything there. So, yeah, I think that's a definite product of the coaching change.
Let's talk a little bit about spring football. That's in full effect over there in Lake Charles for the football team. You know, new man in charge, as you mentioned, with Gilbert. Tell me a little bit about apparently there's a quarterback competition going on during spring ball. What can you tell us about that?
Not a lot, because we can't see things. Everything's closed except for Tuesdays. Realistically, is you bring in a new coach who runs quarterbacks. You have a guy who started part-time last year in Ogeron. You have a young guy in Cam Smith who has a rifle arm, is a big kid who was a freshman, played in three games last year, so he's got his freshman year still here. They're fighting, I think, for the starting job. One thing about the coaching staff here, Gilbert has said, is no matter what, everybody's job is open because I'm new. So I think that's the biggest thing that is, and quarterback is the biggest, obviously, eyeballs. It's what's going to run his system. I think whoever runs his system best will get the job. I don't think I would lead either guy right now into saying that, nor do I at McNeese, nor do you know if somebody's going to come in the summer on a transfer like James Taberney did for three and started 3 years. So I think everything's up for grabs, but especially quarterback. I would not even venture to guess who's going to be out there to start in a couple weeks when they open up when they have their spring game.
Now, Jim, I know he's running a different offense than what they run before, and offense was definitely a problem for the Cowboys last year. They had times
problem.
Where they were just woeful. What's going to be the difference here? Is it a difference in philosophy? Or just execution? What does he want to run? What does he want to do with the Cowboys on offense?
Well, if you watch him, he wants a quarterback that can do both. Not so much option, but he wants the option within the quarterback, if that makes sense. I don't think he's going to be an option guy. But he wants the option of being able to run the ball at times. I think he wants to run the ball about 45% of the time. He'd like a power back, which they don't have. He'd like quality receivers, which they don't have yet, or we haven't seen anybody yet. Now, they do have 19 guys coming in. Nine of them have played college football at some level. One of them from the University of Texas is a wide receiver transferring in. So they have some talent coming in. How much talent and how ready it could be to fit into the system, I don't know. And I don't know how the quarterbacks are. Like you said, last year's offense was pathetic. They had no running game. They had no offensive line. And the receivers were terrible, and they blamed the quarterbacks. You could have blamed five different people for that, any given play. And you could blame the head coach some, because the head coach was a defensive guy, and all he talked about is defense. So the philosophy now was get somebody that wants to think offense, and they got that. Can now he translate that in 1 or 2 years into something – that something like a Houston Baptist did or other people did? I don't know. I mean, I don't know if the talent's there yet. That's going to be, I know the offensive line is better, but you're going to be starting with receivers and running backs who have little experience. There are some tight ends on the roster that I think will help, but from what I've seen, tight ends are not a huge part of his offense.
Jim, appreciate you making the time for us, waking up early, big man. Greatly appreciate it, and we'll have to bring you on in the future.
Yeah, we'll talk basketball in a new arena that gets you 9 wins.
Jim, appreciate you, brother. Enjoy the weekend, my friend.
Thanks. Bye.
That's Jim Gozzolo, the former longtime sports editor of the Lake Charles American Press. He now hosts his own show every Friday night, Eye on Sports, there in Lake Charles, giving us some insight. When we come back, we'll close out the second hour with RPOs with RP3 right here on The Rap Game with RP3 on 103.7 The Game.
Blue poncho.
Shotgun formation. Cody snaps the questions.
Dre.
And RP3 makes the reads. This is RPOs with RP3.
Blue poncho.
All right, Raymond, tell me what you think on this edition of RPOs with RP3. I got to start off with a little LSU baseball talk. In the last four games, LSU has allowed one run, four runs, two runs, and then four runs again, and that was in a 10-inning game. So the pitching and the defense for LSU has been showing up. RPO on the Tigers continuing to allow less than five runs a game this weekend when they take on Georgia on the road.
I run with that all day long. I think they found their mojo. The pitching staff is starting to kind of come into form. Zach Hess has settled down, and they've done a nice job there, especially defensively as well. Also, Georgia is not one of the chest beaters, so to speak, in the SEC. So I think they should be able to easily take care of the Bulldogs this weekend on the road there in Athens. The bigger question is, will they be able to continue that type of performance, Cody, when they go on the road the following weekend and take on the Fighting Cowbells of Mississippi State?
Yeah, that'll be a fun one to see. But the pitching is going in the right direction. That's all we can ask. Now that we move on, a little UL baseball talk for you. The Cajuns have their first home Sun Belt series this weekend. They're taking on App State. Overall, the Cajuns, they're 10-12 this season, but App State is only 8-11. Now, last weekend, UL dropped game one of the series, kind of put themselves behind the eight ball for the rest of it, but they did fight back and win the series 2-3 out of three. RPO for me on this. UL will avoid that tough spot this weekend by losing game one. They're going to get the series opening win tonight.
I say run with that. I think Tony's group, Tony Robichaux, head coach, his group has kind of found something here. You know, they had the up and down start to the season. They took two or three from Little Rock. They've already beaten Southern Miss. They beat a very good Northwestern State team too, Cody, that beat LSU. Okay, now I know they dropped the midweek game this week at Tulane, but App State is one of the worst teams in the Sun Belt. It's going to be back there at the Teague. Terrific weather. I expect a good crowd. Sun Belt season series opener at home for them. I expect the Raging Cajuns to come out, take game one, and I expect them to sweep App State. That's right. You heard it first. RP3 says Raging Cajuns will sweep the folks from Boone, North Carolina.
We can only hope. We can only hope. Hey, and let me throw one more at you. I'll put you on the spot. RPO for me. LSU goes to the Sweet 16. They beat Maryland.
I run with that. I run with that with caution. Or as LSU would term, an abundance of caution.
You run with that. You run with that in the first half, but I'm passing on it in the second.
And then afterwards, I'm just taking an option and just want to have a drink. You know, yeah, I say they do take care of Maryland on Saturday, Cody. I think it's going to be a close game, though. It's going to be a dogfight, but I think LSU finds a way to get to the Sweet 16, and then they'll more than likely have to face a very angry Tom Izzo in Michigan State. If anyone watched that game last night where he chewed out one of his players in an epic fashion, so I do think they take care of Maryland. I think maybe the scare that Yale gave them in the second half will have them motivated to play a complete game Saturday with a Sweet 16 berth on the line. So I'm cautiously running with that, Mr. Schutz.
Very well. The hour is up.
When we come back, third hour, it's jam-packed. We got three guests, including Raging Cajun softball coach Jerry Glasgow. He's going to be joining us. And Tyler Nunez from Tiger Rag. And Barry Hurstis from the Saints. But we'll start things off after this break right here on 103.7 The Game.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette, we are Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game, KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time to step your game up.
Boy, you wouldn't know how to write your name if it wasn't
set for the clock.
It's Rap Game with RP3, Raymond Parts III.
One of God's own prototypes. High-powered mutant of some kind never even considered for mass production. Too weird to live, too rare to die.
Want to interact? Call in at 337-706-0111.
We have it. Yeah, we have it.
RP3 is taking the mic.
and bringing you to the center of the sports world on Rep Game with RP3 on 1037 The Game and 1037thegame.com.
You just got to keep living, man. L-I-V-I-N.
I'll tell you what I'm blathering about. I've got information, man.
Welcome back to the Rap Game with RP3, third hour. Here we are. It's going to be jam-packed with guests, three in a row, ladies and gentlemen. That's how we're going to close out the show here, broadcasting live at La Triomphe Golf and Country Club in Broussard, home of the Chittimacha Louisiana Open, presented by Mistras. Our first guest is our good friend. He covers the New Orleans Saints. He's a featured writer for Big Easy Magazine and a featured columnist for the Saints News Network. He's the New Orleans native himself, our boy, Barry Herstis. Barry, how are you this morning, brother?
RP3, how are you doing this morning, my friend?
I'm doing well, man. I'm doing well. Appreciate you getting up a little bit earlier than normal with us, my friend. Wanted to get you on the show, though. Lots of activity coming out of Saints headquarters here during free agency. A lot of them are small moves. I understand that. But I wanted to kind of get your insight about all the happenings and goings going on with the New Orleans front office and free agency. Let's start with offensively what they're doing. We know we've talked about on the show about Mark Ingram leaving and going to the Baltimore Ravens. He signs that three-year deal worth $15 million. They sign Latavius Murray, power back from Minnesota, 4 years for $14 million. Only $1 million difference and a year difference. My question to you to start things off, Barry, is with that. Mark Ingram meant so much to this team, and in particularly in the locker room. We know how well he ran when he got back from the four-game suspension, how poorly they ran without him. And we saw on social media the reaction by guys like Cam Jordan, Alvin Kamara, Michael Thomas, and others, Teron Armstead, about what Mark's value was into that locker room. Any concern from you that this could be a situation like it was when Malcolm Jenkins and Darren Sproles left the Saints and the team lost that leadership and kind of in a lot of ways the heartbeat of the team?
Yes, yeah, somewhat I do. I wouldn't say it's panic level, so to speak. And you and I, obviously, we discussed this last week at great length and in some detail, and you know, another week's gone by. And basically what you and I discussed last week is what's being rehashed over again. It does concern me somewhat, but again, these guys are professionals and we know where the Saints' focus is right now. I think you can't be blind to the fact that this team is making moves this offseason specifically geared towards making another run at a title in the 2019 season. Yeah, they have their eye on the future. You always got to have an eye on the future, so to speak. But with the way the last two seasons in particular have ended, I think there's a very, very high priority on the part of Saints management to pretty much put all their chips in to the middle of the table, so to speak. That doesn't mean, you know, go crazy and make, you know, preposterous moves. But, I mean, if you look at everything they've done, even the Sherrells signing yesterday afternoon, they're tweaking. They're making little tweaks and little fine-tune adjustments to the roster. Signing a guy like Sherrells, now you got a punt returner. I mean, you have another – it's funny you mentioned Malcolm Jenkins and Darren Sproles. You haven't had a guy to return punts basically since Sproles left. Okay, so now you got, by signing Sherrells, you've got a guy who's got five career punt return touchdowns to his credit. So now all of a sudden, you know, it could be said that the Saints didn't really have a punt return game. You know, with Tommy Lee Lewis, he kind of struggled in that department. Tommy Lee Lewis goes to Detroit. Now you sign a guy like Sherrells who can not only give you adequate depth at corner, but now you've got a legit return guy. So just little stuff like that, that's what's been impressive the most to me so far.
We're on with Barry Hursis of Big Easy Magazine. Barry, let's talk about offensively. You know, we know they've placed a huge emphasis on improving their special teams, locking up guys, gunners on those units, getting Will Lutz's extension, and now getting a punt returner. They've also placed a focus on offensive. We've already talked about Latavius Murray, the running back. They also got Nick Easton, the versatile center/guard from the Vikings. And now all reports are they're locked up Jarrett Cook, who's coming off a career year. What do you think about the moves they've made on the offensive side of the ball, including having Cam Meredith restructure his contract?
Oh, wow. Well, let's run through them because I kind of left you open-ended on the Latavius Murray thing. Let me go back to that just to finish that off a little bit because we kind of got sidetracked. Yes, they're going to miss Mark. Production-wise, no. I think Latavius Murray, you know, again, and this goes back to last week, I think Latavius Murray is a fantastic running back. You know, it's not to take away from Latavius Murray. There's this narrative out there that Latavius Murray is a bad player, that it's a horrible signing. No, that's not what anybody's saying. What we're saying is Mark Ingram brought you the passion, the desire, the fire, a leadership role, a guy who gets his teammates involved. When you played that game where you've been, you know, down 13-10 all game, and all of a sudden, bam, here comes Ingram, bam, he gets a 35-yard run, bam, it's spark, it's emotion. You know, you get where I'm going with that. So that's what they're going to miss with Mark. I don't want people to misunderstand the narrative here. You're going to miss Mark Ingram for a lot more than what he, you know, gave you on the field. Now, going to these other guys, Cam Meredith took a pay cut, a substantial pay cut, to remain on the roster. So, you know, we've seen, are the Saints going to go after a slot receiver? They still might. It would not shock me one bit if you saw them in the draft next month target a guy like Andy Isabella from UMass or a Deebo Samuel from South Carolina, or even a Paris Campbell from Ohio State. Should he still be sitting there? I think the Saints are a little sweet on him, but he probably won't make it to number 62. But you need another athletic receiver. You need another speed guy to take the pressure off Michael Thomas. Now, obviously, putting Jared Cook into your offense changes a lot of dynamics, because basically Jared Cook is a gigantic wide receiver, basically, is what he is. It's almost, sacrilegious to refer to him as a tight end. He's basically a 6'5", 255-pound wide receiver that moves very well for a man his age. I think that's going to be, along with the Malcolm Brown signing, I think that the Jared Cook signing is going to be one of the biggest signings that you will see in all of free agency. I think Jared Cook is going to have a monster year for the Saints in 2019. So he's a perfect fit for that offense. He kind of gives you what you were missing when you traded away Jimmy Graham a few years ago. He's got that kind of dynamic ability as a receiver. Adequate blocker. He's not gonna blow you away. They didn't sign him to come in here and block. They signed him to come in here and put up nearly 1,000 yards receiving, and maybe even six, eight, even 10 touchdown receptions for a 32-year-old tight end, because he turns 32 next month. But he's still got gas in the tank. I heard some Saints fans, oh, he's too old. No, he's not. Yeah, he's 31. He's going to turn 32. He's still got a couple of good years left. And to me, I know a lot of Saints fans are worried about the contract details. You know, why hasn't Jared Cook signed? How come we haven't heard it? And my understanding is they were maybe trying to iron out some more details about the guaranteed money, because, you know, every NFL player right now, they're all about guaranteed money. and the length of the contract. Let's remember, man turns 32 years old next month. So this might be Jared Cook's last contract of his playing career. You see, so that to me is what was holding up things because, you know, hey, look, the man wants to get paid, and chances are this is his last, quote unquote, big contract of his career. So I think that's what was holding negotiations up. But rest assured, Jared Cook is a member of the New Orleans Saints, and Saints fans should be excited about the prospects of him joining this team.
Barry, brother, I appreciate you making some time for us. As always, man, enjoy the rest of your weekend, and we'll talk to you next week, my friend.
Sounds good, brother. Looking forward to it.
That's Barry Hurstis, the one and only friend of the show, breaking us down some New Orleans Saints talk right here on the Rap Game with RP3. When we come back, we're going to head out to Mobile, Alabama, and talk to the head coach of the Raging Cajun softball program, the one and only Jerry Glasgow. They're gearing up for a three-game set there against South Alabama. You can listen to that live right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to the Rap Game with RP3. I'm your host, Raymond Parse III. We're broadcasting live from La Triomphe Golf and Country Club here in Broussard, home of the Chittimacha Louisiana Open, presented by Mistros. We're going to head out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline and welcome on our next guest. He is the second-year head coach of the Raging Cajun softball program. The Raging Cajuns are currently ranked in the top 10 in the country, and they're in Mobile, Alabama right now to begin a three-game series against the Jaguars of South Alabama. It's our privilege to welcome on to the show head coach Jerry Glasgow. Coach, how are you this morning, my friend?
I'm doing great.
Coach, appreciate you taking some time out to talk to us. I know you're gearing up. Let's start with the other night. Obviously, you lose a tough game against the McNeese State Cowgirls. Extra innings affair. I know you said afterwards that maybe the team was under a little too much pressure, so to speak. Can you elaborate a little bit about that and about the other game, the game the other night?
Well, the game because of the press conference and talking about when you get out and feel like you plan to host a regional at home, you'd like to think you've got a chance to do that. Of course, I'll be asking out on Monday. So that was a topic of conversation, the press conference. At that moment, I was kicking myself thinking if he had a pressure by even talking about that, but say the answer should have been to play one game at a time, whatever happened, and it happens. I wanted to put pressure on the kid. Then after I thought about it, slept on it for, you know, players have to learn to play with pressure. You have to love pressure. You have to thrive under pressure. So I don't know if that had anything to do with it. I think we just played a really – we just had a subpar performance and played a bad game. We didn't get the big hit at the right moment. The kids have been unbelievable doing that all year long. It's been great. And our offense is second in the country. We scored runs, and that night we just scored four. And if we'd had five, we'd won. So we've been averaging about 7.7. So, you know, unfortunately, that's how the game plays out. And, you know, we get it to the 11th inning, and we make a couple of untimely errors, and we let the game get away from us. And hopefully we'll learn from that. We can come back and be a bigger football club.
We're talking to UL Raging Cajun softball head coach Jerry Glasgow. Coach, you know, I would assume you're a veteran. You're a veteran guy. You've been a longtime assistant coach before you took over the program here in Lafayette. But a game like this that you lose, a tough game, is this an opportunity for maybe you guys and your staff to refocus on some things and maybe have a little bit more motivation for your girls to improve and even get better now that we're talking, you know, this point of the season? Maybe this is kind of a way to kind of give you guys an opportunity to work on things even more so.
Well, I think we worked about as hard as you can work. I don't think we have much room to work harder, so to speak. I think we're working as hard as we can work every day. We don't take anything for granted. Obviously, since last September, we've been thinking in terms of making a run. Seriously, this is the time to
the World Series if they really improve and work hard. So, you know, I don't know that there's that much room to improve as far as our work habit. I hope our work habit is not bad all the time. But if it's a chance now, we'll reevaluate some things. We're going to make some lineup changes. And you've got to stay being active. And you got the last night of games. The wheels are falling off. You know, we're still winning. We just played a bad game. And we got to lead a subpar performance. At the same time, we want to be far better than what we did that night. So we'll reevaluate some things. We've got to get some pitch hitting that have kind of gotten a little mid-season slump here. And we get them re-involved in our offense. And we'll change some things up and move some kids down, take some pressure off them. Maybe move some kids up, put some pressure on them that are hitting well. And kind of re-mix a little bit and see what happens.
We're going to take a moment here to try to get Coach a better connection with Coach Jerry Glasgow here. We're talking to the head coach of the Raging Cajun softball program. We'll try to improve on that connection there. His team is on the road, as I said earlier, on the road facing South Alabama there in conference play. They have a three-game series against the Jaguars. Coach was talking a little bit there about what they could do to kind of learn from losing to McNeese State. Losing to McNeese State there and in a tough fashion in extra innings like that. And, you know, they put some pressure on themselves. They had crept into the top 10 nationally in the rankings, and you know, they suffered a tough loss. Once again, it's a midweek game. This team is built for conference play, as we know, and once we get Coach back on the line, we'll discuss that with him as we're trying to work on fixing that connection. But you know, this team is still one of the best teams in the country, even with a midweek loss like that. This team is more than likely going to put that behind them and gear up for a weekend series against South Alabama. Coach, are you there?
Yeah, we're here.
Mm-hmm. Okay, all right. We got a far better connection this time around, brother. Thank you for calling us back. Now, Coach, tell me a little bit about this weekend's opponent. You take on South Alabama. You're over there in Mobile to take on the Jaguars. What kind of challenges do the Jaguars present your team?
Well, the biggest thing, they're a long-time rival, you know, and there's a lot of history between the two programs. So that's the big thing. They're going to get up to the series, and, of course, they'll know we're coming off a loss on Wednesday night. And, you know, I think it's really important we get control of the series right off the bat tonight and we establish our dominance if we can. And there's the fact that they're just a well-coached team. They're traditionally one of the best teams in the Sun Belt, and they're going to try to come out and play like a really good ball club, and we got to expect that. I think it's we control our own destiny if we can get our offense back going and get back up to around the 7-8 run mark. We should be fine, and that needs to be our goal: score 8 to 10 runs every single game. And if we do that, then it's really hard to lose. But that's, you know, the game sometimes doesn't go that way, and we'll let the game play out and see how we have to win it and try to figure out a way to win.
We're on with Raging Cajun's head softball coach, Jerry Glasgow. He's joining us live from Mobile as his team gets ready to take a three-game series against South Alabama. Coach, tell us a little bit about the performance of Summer Ellison. She's a former Turlings Catholic star, local girl right here from Acadiana. She has been kind of lights out this year. And she was good for you last year, but she seems to be even better this year. Can you tell us a little bit about her performance taking the bump for you this season?
Yeah, she's just a really talented pitcher. She can make the ball drop. She can make the ball rise. She's got a great changeup this season and been able to use her off-speed effectively in critical moments. But she wasn't as good at that last year, but her rise ball, her velocity's up this year. She's one of the elite pitchers in the whole country. I think she's second in the nation in wins right now with 17. And she's able to throw a lot of innings. You know, I look back last night, and she went 240 innings for us last year. We're halfway through the season. She's thrown 120.
but she's throwing the same number of innings. She's on pace to throw the same number of innings this year she threw last year. And I think we're all worried about her, how much we use it. But on the other hand, when you've got a great pitcher like that, you want to use them. You don't want to let them, you don't want to hide them. When you've got them, you don't have those times very often. We want to take advantage and get her out there and give her every chance we can to help us get the, you know, get the season and the postseason seedings that we need. And we're very, very fortunate to have a pitcher that can throw with that velocity, with that much break, and then she locates the ball extremely well. Another area she's improved in, she's really lowered her walks this year. She just doesn't get many free passes.
We're on with Jerry Glasgow. He's the head softball coach there for the Louisiana Raging Cajuns. Coach, I want to talk a little bit something that you guys were able to do last weekend for the alumni reunion series against Troy. Obviously, you guys took care of business, you know, got the sweep against Troy, but it was something that else that you guys did that I want to talk about, and that was naming the field after Yvette Girard. What was that like for you to take part in that, and how important was that for you guys to do something like that, honoring the coach who helped build the program and lay the foundation?
Well, I think it was huge for our program to, you know, really show appreciation to Coach Girard and the commitment that she made and you know, her as the architect of the program. All the things that she did back there in the original years when she was underpaid and understaffed, and you know, it was a time when the universities didn't have the money that they have in sports today, and coaches had to work extremely hard, and they definitely weren't working for the paycheck at that point. So I think it's really huge for us to be able to show that kind of appreciation for all that she did and the foundation that she laid for a program that even 40 years later, the program's never missed a beat. It just keeps winning and winning. So, and then to have her back in the stands, and we wanted to be a bigger part of our program. She's a hometown, local kid, you know, and I think it's just huge for us to have her there and in our back pocket. She's helped me all the way since I've been hired. Her advice, her knowledge of the community and the local people, and it's immeasurable how much that helps.
Coach, appreciate you making some time for us. Best of luck this weekend, and we'll talk to you soon, my friend.
Okay, thank you.
Coach Jerry Glasgow, UL softball head coach. When we come back here on the Wrap Game, Tyler Nunes, Tiger Rag, will be joining us live from Jacksonville, recapping the Tigers' big NCAA tournament win here on 103.7 The Game. The first... Welcome back to the Wrap Game with RP3. I'm your host, Raymond Parse III, broadcasting live from La Triomphe Golf and Country Club here in Broussard, home of the Chittimacha Louisiana Open, presented by Mistras. Third hour, third guest of said third hour, and we're going to head out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline to welcome on our next guest, because he's going to help give us a recap of what occurred yesterday in Jacksonville and help us preview what's going to hopefully occur on Saturday. LSU won its opening round game versus Yale in the 3-14 matchup. Now the Tigers will take on the Terrapins of Maryland on Saturday with a berth on the Sweet 16 on the line. That game will tip off at 11:10 Central Time. Pre-game show right here on 103.7 The Game at 10:30. Tip at 11:10. You can listen to it live right here on 103.7 The Game, your home for the LSU Tigers. But now we're going to head out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline and welcome on our next guest. He covers the LSU men's basketball team for Tiger Rag. It's the one and only Tyler Nunes. Tyler, how are you this morning, my friend?
I'm doing well. It's a beautiful morning out here in Jacksonville, Florida.
It's a beautiful morning also because you get another game to cover, unlike what we had to deal with in Nashville, my friend.
Absolutely. I get to enjoy the city a little bit this time.
There we go. Let's go back to yesterday. The first half couldn't have gone better. They dominated the paint. They shut down Yale's best player, the only player they have on their roster that's a potential NBA draft prospect. And then once again, the second half happened. Tyler, why can't this team play a complete game of basketball?
It's funny we're used to seeing them kind of struggle in the first half and then come back and kind of find ways to win. This kind of reminded me of non-conference LSU, what we saw back in November and December when they jump out to the lead and then they started kind of settling. What we see when this happens is LSU will just kind of start running a half-court offense. They get kind of lackadaisical. And instead of running their offense the way they did in the first half, we got them there, they seem to try to start limiting possessions. And as we learned against Florida, LSU is just not a slow-tempo team. They have to be kind of controlling the pace in order for them to pull away from teams or to build leads on teams. And whenever they start kind of getting into that half-court game, I think bad things tend to happen. So I think part of it is preserving energy. I think part of it is trying to preserve a lead. In my opinion, it's the NCAA tournament. You throw all that away. You go out and try to win every game by as many as you can, because if things go wrong and you lose, you're going home. And to me, if you lose a game going, balls to the wall, like, then there's no shame in that. But if they would have lost yesterday, I think that would have been a very disappointing loss, for not just because they lost, but the way they lost.
Another thing that stood out about yesterday's game to me, Tyler, was Yale jacked up 37 shots from three-point range. They only made 8 of them. If they make even 3 more of those, they probably win the game. How can LSU make any adjustments to better defend the three-point shot? I mean, Yale, the shot didn't go down for them yesterday, and they lost. Moving forward, LSU is going to face even better competition. So how can they make an adjustment? Is there something that Coach Bedford can do with this team to help them improve with their defense when it comes to the three-point shot?
I think they actually, shot – the reason Yale shot so many threes is because early in the game, Cavell Bigby-Williams was so dominant in the post defensively that – Yale kind of reverted to a live or die by the three attitude for a large portion of the first half, which worked for a little bit and kind of got them back in the game for a little bit early in that first half. But then LSU, they stopped falling, and LSU was able to take advantage and go up by 16 at halftime. And then towards the end of the game, obviously Yale was going to take a lot of threes because, they're trying to come back. And then they end up hitting 4 in the final minute of the game, which is kind of incredible to witness. I really didn't have much of a problem with their defensive performance yesterday. I think they held a really good shooting and offensively efficient Yale team to, 30% from the field, which is pretty impressive. So, and then on top of that, they're not going to face another team that shoots the way that Yale does. At least it doesn't look that way. Maryland is really going to try to pound it inside against them. If they get past them, they're probably going to play against Michigan State, who does the same thing. And then presumably Duke after that. So if LSU can continue through this tournament, it doesn't look like they're going to face another team that's going to be willing to shoot as many threes as Yale did yesterday.
We're on with Tyler Nunez of Tiger Rag. Tyler, let's talk a little bit about Naz Reid. He had himself a good game again, and he's been playing at a very consistent level. That's the thing that I've seen from him. You and I have talked about this on the show before, that he was kind of growing into his body, and it seems like the last month or so, Naz has figured kind of maybe something out, and he's playing more consistent, and he's being more aggressive as well when he's attacking the basket. What did you think of Naz's performance, not only yesterday in the tournament, but kind of down the stretch for the Tigers?
Yeah, I think he's just a lot more confident now than he was a couple months ago. I think this is what we've been waiting for. I think Naz Reid is an excellent basketball player. He's probably going to be playing in the NBA next season. He's a fish athlete. He can jump out of the building, and he's very good on those. I think he needs to get a little bit patient offensively. A lot of times he seems to be too willing to shoot that three, which at times is great. But what really needed yesterday in the half for him to dominate the post. I mean, he had decided both height-wise and weight-wise. And whenever he did get the ball down there, outside of one charge, I mean, he really kind of dominated offensively. So I think he's not going to be able to do that against Maryland. I think it's going to be a little bit more interesting when he's going one-on-one with Bruno Fernando, a lottery pick for this next draft. But I am curious to see how he goes up against a guy like that.
Let's talk a little bit about Saturday's matchup there, Tyler. You just kind of hinted at it. You talked about their bigs, and look, Bigby Williams had a good game for LSU too, especially early on where he's blocking shots. He had a double-double, so did Naz Reid. Are we going to see more of an emphasis for LSU with the bigs? Are they going to have to play at even a better level on Saturday if they want to beat the Terps?
Oh, undoubtedly. Maryland has a post that can go toe-to-toe with LSU's, and they're one of the few teams in the country who do. But Bruno Fernando, like I said, he's projected potentially to even go to the New Orleans Pelicans. A lot of draft boards have him going around number nine to the Pelicans. And then Jalen Smith is another guy who really complements him really well. They really do remind me a lot of Cavell, Bigby Williams, and Naz Reid in a lot of ways. I think they mirror each other. I think that LSU's guard play is actually going to be the answer in this game because in an ideal world for LSU, those two post guys kind of those two posts kind of cancel each other out. So I think the guard play is going to be a difference, and I think LSU does have an advantage there. I think Tremont Waters should give LSU an advantage as long as he doesn't turn the ball over too many times. And it's going to be an interesting matchup because these two teams mirror each other in a lot of different ways. The only main difference is that Maryland likes to slow it down and LSU likes to run the floor. And it feels like whoever's going to come out on top is going to control the pace.
Tyler, how important was it, regardless of what happens on Saturday, with everything that swirled around this program and the way they had the early exit from the SEC tournament? I know their expectations. This team feels like they can make a run to the Final Four despite being in what kind of is looking to be the region of death, so to speak. I know that's their expectation, but how important was it for them for this season with everything that's kind of come around at the tail end of the season with the Will Wade situation, with Javonte Smart being held out, with them losing the SEC tournament? How big was it for them to get at least the one win in the tournament?
I think it was huge. I think considering we were probably at the end of the Will Wade era, I think it's important for them to get this win to kind of push LSU moving forward. I think that there's definite ground that has been made because if they lose that game, especially the way that it looked like they might, it would have been like we're like, oh, it's more of the same, because we went through this in 2015 whenever they blew that lead to NC State in the first round. And winning your first NCAA tournament game in a decade is no small matter. It's a really important thing to do. I do think it gives LSU some confidence going into the next game. And Belmont's and Maryland's coming off a really hard-fought win against a really tough Belmont team. And I think that they need all the momentum they can get. And then as far as perspective goes, I'm of the opinion that they're going to be looking for a new coach in the matter of a few years. I think that having that one under their belt is going to give both players a reason to stay and then coaches a reason to come here.
We're talking to Tyler Nunez of Tiger Rag. Tyler, let's switch it off from the hardwood and let's talk a little football if you don't mind. LSU is holding their pro day today. Obviously, you won't be there unless you have a private jet I'm not aware of.
No.
I don't know.
Thank God.
Yeah,
I hate pro day so much.
But pro day is going on. Anyone of the guys that are going to be taking part in the pro day, brother, is there anyone that really needs to have a strong performance and is looking to make one last good impression on the scouts that will be in attendance today in Baton Rouge?
I think the guy that really jumps to mind is Nick Brissett. I don't think he had the combine he wanted to have. He had a good like senior day performance, but I think that if anyone's going to go out there and improve his draft stock, it's got to be him. I think he has a lot of room to improve in, as far as that regard goes. I think he wants a faster 40 time. I think which he'll probably get at LSU Pro Day if we're being honest. And I think he probably wants to do a little bit better in other drills. And it's just another opportunity for him to show what he can do in front of a ton of NFL scouts. There's probably going to be a scout from every team in the league there. So. It's definitely a big event. I personally don't like it. It's a long day, man, for us reporter types. But it is a big day for a lot of these guys. And it's really fun for the kids who they're not going to the NFL, but they get kind of one last chance to practice, perform, and play with their teammates for one last time. I think it's a fun event for the players.
Tyler, let's wrap it up with this last question, brother. Ed Orgeron, reports came out that the university has given him a contract extension and a bump in pay. Mm-hmm. I'll start it off with first. Were you surprised that that occurred, and do you think it's deserving?
Oh, I'm not surprised at all, and I think it's very, very deserving. I think that considering what the expectations for were for LSU last year compared to where they ended up with a 10-win season and a New Year's Six Bowl win. I think there's no doubt that, Ed Orgeron is the coach for right now. I think they needed to lock that down. And I think it shows a lot of confidence from the university toward Ed Orgeron. And I think it's very deserved. I think that a lot of people thought that Ed Orgeron would be a placeholder coach until a better coach came around. But he's shown so far that he's willing to make the moves both in recruiting and in going and getting coaches. Like, going and get this Joe Brady kid to be their new passing game coordinator is a huge move. To help Ensminger and to really give Joe Burrow a coach and a system that he can thrive in, I think that shows a lot of leadership, and I think it shows that Ed Orgeron is willing to do what it takes to get this LSU team back to where a lot of fans think it should be.
And one final question before we let you go, brother. Have you had a chance to look over the contract to see how many cases of Red Bull that he will receive as part of this contract?
I have not seen any Red Bull in there, but I just kind of skimmed it. So that's a question for James Rand. Maybe he'll know.
If it's not in the contract, you know he's got a little extra money now. I'm pretty sure Red Bull has Baton Rouge circled as one of its best-selling places. If I'm Red Bull and I know all about this, man, I'm trying to get Ed Orgeron in a commercial. I don't know about you, man. I want to see Edo in another commercial that rivals the legendary commercial he did for the Hummer dealership when he was with as the Ole Miss head coach when he said, "Go talk to JoJo."
I love that. Put some wings on him this time.
Come on. It's priceless. That'd be awesome. If Les Miles can have his Dr. Pepper mini movie commercial, I think we can make Ed Orgeron have a Red Bull commercial. And I think, look, as one of the writers for Tiger Rag, I think you need to make that happen. Just saying.
I need to make that happen?
Yeah.
I'll see what I can do, Ray. I don't know how much persuasion I have in that realm, but
Well, Tyler, brother, I appreciate it. Enjoy Jacksonville, man, and have fun covering the game on Saturday. And we'll talk to you next week, my friend.
Yeah, sounds good. Yeah, have a good one.
That's Tyler Nunez, Tiger Rag's own, covering the men's basketball team over there. Just a reminder, ladies and gentlemen, that you can listen to the LSU men's basketball game on Saturday. Once again, pregame will be at 10:30. We'll have a condensed version of the producer show, the world-famous Clint D. He'll take care of you from 10 to 10:30, and then at 10:30, it will be LSU pregame, and then tip a little after 11 o'clock. Sweet 16 berth is on the line for the Tigers. Also, tonight, 5:30 pregame for LSU baseball at Georgia, 6 o'clock first pitch. Our good brother Ben Love will be right out here at the golf course. He'll be broadcasting live for Bumper to Bumper Sports. Until then, he'll take you up to that. And then, if you want to, you can go hang out with Ben at Twin Peaks on Johnston. He'll be having an NCAA watch party there from 6 to 8. They got great deals on wings. Me and Cody Schutz tried them out yesterday. Get you a cold beer as well. So make sure to go check that out. We'll wrap up today's show and the week live right here from La Triomphe Golf and Country Club in Broussard, home of the Chittimacha Louisiana Open, presented by Mistros, after this break on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to the Rap Game with RP3. I am your host, Raymond Parse III. And I'm broadcasting live here for the final segment of the week from La Triomphe Golf and Country Club here in Broussard, home of the Chittimacha Louisiana Open, presented by Mistros. And I want to take a moment here to thank everyone associated with the tournament, including Danny Jones, for letting us come out here once again, letting us broadcast and accommodating us. It's been a privilege to be out here, and I've had a blast broadcasting live and direct from the golf course. Getting up a little bit earlier than normal was a bit of an adjustment, Cody, as you are well aware, sir, but we handled it smoothly. I also want to thank Cody Schutz for doing a tremendous job this week, bro.
Well, I'm going to need a better thank you than that. I'm going to need a better one than that.
Cody, you handled things swimmingly all week this week. I want to thank you for that, brother. And it'll be good to be reunited in the studio there in the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing on Monday after being in Nashville on last Friday and then out here all week. So it'll be good to be back in the comfy confines of the home studio there in Upper Lafayette. But great job this week, brother.
So yeah, I appreciate that, man. We will welcome you back with open arms on Monday, kind of get into our back to our normal kind of swing of things. I'll be able to look at you, so when, you know, I do when you do something dumb, I can stare you in the face.
You can give me you can give me the look that like yeah, dude, what are you doing?
Don't do that again. And then you know, I had a blast this weekend. I don't know. We've got the Chittimacha, Louisiana Open going on all weekend long, so you can check that out. There's Cajuns baseball. They're at home this weekend. You can check that out. The Tigers, granted, they're on the road, but I'm sure you can find them on your television set. You can find them on the radio dial here all weekend except on Saturday. Saturday now, the baseball game, because of basketball, the baseball game is going to be a local broadcast only. So we won't have the Saturday baseball game on the air, but we will have the Friday and Sunday baseball games and the Saturday March Madness basketball game. So that's kind of the rundown. Things are, as far as the LSU schedule goes, very fluid right now on the station. So just trying to keep everybody up to date and posted of what LSU looks like this weekend.
Also, while we got a moment before we wrap up, Cody, we need to give a big shout out and a congratulations to the good brother, Ben Love. Can you tell the people why we are doing that, my friend?
Well, that is because the one brother, Ben Love, brought home an incredible award last night from the LA Broadcasters. Well done. He brought home the best sports radio show in the state. Well done, brother Ben Love. The Louisiana right. Broadcast industry honoring Bumper to Bumper Sports, which, of course, finds its home right here on 103.7 The Game.
Yeah, one of the hardest working guys.
And shout out to
business.
Clint D2, because I sit in the same chair Clint does, and I know that he does a lot to go into that show as well. So well done, brother Ben, and the famous CD.
That's right. Well deserved. Both of those guys work their tails off to put together that show, and it's a terrific show, and we're proud to call him a friend and a co-worker. So congratulations to them. Cody.
Raymond.
Before we wrap things up, what's the game plan for the weekend in the Schutz household, my friend?
Oh, well, of course the weekend's going to be sports-filled, right? We've got basketball, we got baseball, a lot of stuff to watch. But tonight, oh, tonight, I will be in the building. I will be at the Cajun Dome for the Toughest Monster Truck Tour. I will be in the building. Cannot wait. So excited. Bring in the six-year-old. I think he's going to lose his mind. We bought him a monster truck shirt, so he'll be ready to go, ready and raring to fire off. And I cannot wait for that Toughest Monster Truck Tour tonight at the Cajun Dome.
You know what you could do? That sounds awesome, by the way, and I'm a little jealous. I would never be able to take my daughter to that because she'd be like, no.
Yeah, enjoy Paw Patrol Live.
You should just scream at them to get them ready. Just scream, Gravedigger, Bigfoot.
Bigfoot.
At them the whole time just to get them prepared. Me and my wife, we're going to take part in a crawfish boil tonight. And then we're going to a wedding on Saturday. One of our friends is getting married in Maurice. So we're not going to be doing the monster truck thing, but we're going to have a good time as well. Look, Cody, once again, thanks, good brother. Everyone out there, thanks for listening this week. We'll be back on the air again next week. Y'all have a great weekend. And come out here to the tournament if you can. You'll enjoy yourself. Y'all be safe. Talk to you then.